The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 2nd of December 2020. On the podcast today, Dan Betts, CEO of Hummingbird Resources, provides an operational update following a senior management site visit to the Yanfolila gold mine last week. Also on the podcast, Nicholas Lee, Director of Piraeus Investments, and Atif Yacoub discusses the company's investment in decentralized finance. Also, Glenn Goodman, author of The Crypto Trader. And we talk about Bitcoin, Ethereum, conspiracy theories, and vaccine approval day. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I highlight two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 visions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. Check it out. There's one there, an article there on Tech Capital. There's also a video there with Paul Green and Equals Group CEO. That's Ian Shafford-Taylor. What else is there? Hummingbird Resources. There's New Formix. There's lots of content right there. There's also a COVID-19 index on the front page. Click that and you'll see which of the biggest risers and fallers of the day in the COVID index. Tech Capital is up the biggest here, 8%, 13 pence. Biggest faller, Gene Drive, down 7% to 52.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dan Betts, CEO of Hummingbird Resources. HUM is ticker there. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thanks very much for having me on.
Now, you've just come back from Mali. You've released a production update, and of course, we'll dig into that. But it's not just about Mali. There's other things going on. So just give us a brief summary, Dan, for people. I know there's lots of people looking around at the moment for gold stocks because gold's taking a bit of a dip. I think it is a little dip, and it's worth buying the dip here. But people are looking around for gold stocks. So if people are looking around, just give them a summary of what you're all about, please, Dan, if you could.
Okay, Justin. Well, Hummingbird is a gold producer with a gold mine in Mali called Yanfolila, where I've just got back from. We also have a development project in Guinea called Karusa, where we aim to be a multi-asset producer within sort of about 18 months, producing about 220,000 to 230,000 ounces of gold a year. And we also have a large, high-quality exploration project in Liberia that we're developing with a joint venture partner.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, take us through some of the key updates from the trip then, down the production updates as well.
So, I mean, as you know, it's been an incredibly challenging year logistically to get to site and to move things around. So, I mean, it was just good to get to site, spend time with the guys. We've had a lot of management changes in Hummingbird with a new general manager, internally promoted guy called Edric Wolfingen, who's doing a fantastic job pulling the team together. And really my enduring impression from the trip was just, I'm so proud of the guys. I mean, they've been under untold pressure this year. Some people pulling sort of 8-9 month rotations. COVID has obviously been very challenging. Military coup in Mali, worst rainy season on record. They've just, it keeps coming and the guys have kept going. So, you know, that's all positive. And I think Hummingbird and Yanfolila are set up for years of better and steady production from site. But, you know, unfortunately, one of my jobs is also to assess materiality. And I think it's clear post my trip that the likelihood of us missing the bottom end of our production guidance is high. And so that's something I've sort of had to highlight in this announcement today. And the reasons for that are all perfectly logical and explainable. But, you know, it's still something that needs to be explained.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you're not the only ones. I mean, let's be honest, you're flying compared to most businesses. Most businesses have had to write off 2020 completely. So let's look beyond that, because you didn't have to do that. But I mean, let's look beyond that. So how does this affect anything in terms of 2021 and growth beyond that?
Well, I mean, look, let's come back to the reasons why in a minute, Justin. But yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a game of two halves. I mean, I feel operationally, we've had challenges, but we're improving on every front. But strategically and corporately, Hummingbird's never been in better shape. We have paid down our debt. We're virtually completely debt free. You know, only about 10 million of the outstanding debt to pay off at the end of the year. We have a high quality, high grade development project in Guinea that is coming along and taking shape nicely. And we have a JV partner in Liberia developing our large scale Dubi project towards feasibility. So, you know, I think Yanfolila is well set up for several years of cash generation. And I think the exploration programs this year have been highly encouraging and will look to extend that mine life. So, you know, strategically, I think we're in great shape. I just, unfortunately, it has been a very challenging year, and you have to deal with the reality.
Yeah. And let's be honest, it's very rarely you're going to get, like I said, a pandemic, a military coup, one of the worst rainy seasons, all happening in one year, is it, really?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's unprecedented. But if I can just talk you through that, Justin, I mean, back to Q2 and Q3, where we delivered less ounces than our mine plan, a lot of that was deliberate and strategic. We changed the mine plan to process softer ore that would have less wear and tear on the crushing circuit and the mill, because we needed to preserve the critical parts in the mill, because we had no idea how long borders would be closed for, and we had to preserve the supply chain. So I think that was a very responsible and sensible management decision, and ultimately the plant's working well, recoveries are good, and we haven't stopped. But we anticipated getting back into the higher grade fresh rock portions of the pit earlier, towards the end of Q3, beginning of Q4. And unfortunately, that plan was stymied by the enduring wet season that was the worst on record. So, you know, the bottoms of the pits were just difficult to access. And what the good news in this is, the pits are in good shape now. That ore is being mined. It's going through the plant. And ore which wasn't mined is still in the pit. So these are just deferred ounces. And unfortunately, there'll be a bit of slippage, and that will slip into 2021. There just isn't enough time left in the year, in all probability, to make it up. I mean, it's still technically possible, but I think unlikely.
Yeah. But if you look forward there, let's be honest, will there be another military coup? Is the weather going to be as bad? Is the pandemic going to be here? You can cross off a couple of those at least, can't you?
Well, I mean, I think everyone listening to this podcast, you included, has given up second-guessing what's fiction and what's reality anymore. I mean, it just seems 2020 has been a year where it just keeps coming. And I would like to think that we've overcome untold challenges. It's brought the team close together, and there's a great future. And I think things are looking good. But day to day, you just got to keep going.
Mm. Yeah. And you said then, that there's the two current operating pits extended depth with high grade. Can you explain a bit more about that and the future potential of that, please, Dan?
Well, yes, sure. So, I mean, what you're referring to is the diagrams in the release today, Justin, that highlight where we are in the pit and where the original mine plan for 2020 would have been at this stage had we been able to mine according to that plan. And what it shows is the grade that would have made up these ounces is still there to be mined, and is in fact being mined now. So, you know, what it should do is allay any fears that the ore body is not performing as per the grade. The grade is there, the ore body's still there. It's just been a huge logistical challenge, really, I think is the best way to explain it.
Yeah. Okay. And what about Caruso? And any updates there?
Well, I think Caruso is very exciting for us. I mean, it's a project that we have spent this year doing pre-development studies on to finalise the feed and the capex numbers. And we are looking to have the mining license any day now from the Guinea government and finalise that feed around the new year, and then hopefully we'll be looking to make a construction decision to start development of the project in the new year. And, you know, we believe that is a high-grade project with circa 100,000 ounces a year with outstanding exploration potential, which was what drew us to the project. So I think there's a tremendously exciting opportunity and value there for us.
Yeah. I'd say, okay, well, let's let's look forward as always, Dan. Three reasons at the end there then, because I mean, let's be honest, I think most of the population is looking forward to 2021 and putting 2020 behind us. So three reasons why someone should hit that follow button and add Hummingbird Resources to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, I think we've deleveraged extremely fast. We haven't missed a beat on that. So as of Q2 next year, we'll be debt-free, and Jan Falila should be generating strong cash flows at say, $1,800 gold and $1,000 ASIC. The mine should be producing in the region of sort of $80 to $90 million of EBITDA a year, actually more than that. I can't do the maths off on the top of my head, but very strong potential to generate cash. That's one reason. Mm-hmm. A second reason is the internal growth profile we've got, with extending the mine life at Jan Falila and the new project at Karusa and the optionality in Dubi. I think it's difficult to find a junior with the organic growth profile Hummingbird has. And I think, if those two things bear out to be true, our share price is very low. That's another good reason to invest. If you look at it on a multiple of cash flow or NPV or anything, really, I think Hummingbird is good value. And my fourth reason, to give you a bonus reason, is I'm not surprisingly, I'm a big bull on the gold price. I think all this money that's been printed can only play into the hands of hard assets like gold, and I think it's going up. And if it does, that's good for producers like us.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone in thinking that, Dan. I think, you know, people are saying $3,000 for gold. I've seen some people saying, and you can justify it sort of to a certain extent. But yeah, I think this is a dip. And so having gold, of course, and I said there's a lot of interest around gold at the moment. I'm seeing it all over social media from private investors. It's a hot space, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, I mean, Pierre Lassonde, who was one of the gurus of the industry, knows a lot more about this than me or most people, says it's going to $20,000. So Let's hope he's right.
Yep. Always room for a gold stock in your portfolio. Dan, thanks very much for that. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your time, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nicholas Lee, Director of Piraeus Investments, and Atif Yacoub is founder of Yop. And we'll explain what that's about in a bit. Nick, thanks for joining me. Atif, thanks for joining me.
Yep, Justin, great to be here. I just wanted to sort of, you know, maybe talk a little bit about this new investment that we've made in Yop, which we announced today. You know, it's in a very topical area of cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. and in particular, decentralized finance. But rather than listen to me on that, I'm going to hand you over to the founder of the business, Atif, who can talk us through a little bit about Yop and decentralized finance.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, go for it, Atif, because I know decentralized finance is a very hot area at the moment. A lot of people mentioning it, DeFi of school. So take us through what your company does, please, if you could.
Yeah, thanks, Justin, for having us on. So yeah, as a highline summary, first, just to give you an introduction, decentralized finance is financial products like token deposit accounts, and, you know, bonds similar to traditional finance products, but operating on an open source network, which is secured by thousands of computers around the world with no individual person controlling that network. So just like Bitcoin, I guess most people are aware of today, you know, best performing asset class of the past decade. And that is an open decentralized network. And this is the kind of the next wave of financial development within the crypto space. So bearing that in mind, with the explosion of DeFi, where, you know, locked token deposits have grown from just under $1 billion earlier this year to over, you know, $12-13 billion today, mm-hmm. there's been a tremendous amount of growth and appetite in this space. But the area that's lacking is the user interface and a platform which can capture new users without them getting tied up into complex technical jargon and having to go through kind of, you know, a month's on end education process prior to engaging with this new technology. So we're kind of saying that we're akin to the Robin Hood of DeFi. Mm-hmm. We're bringing you DeFi to your mobile phone with a desktop and a tablet syncing application later on. And what that will do is that'll allow you to control your funds, have custody of them, and participate in DeFi markets in a very simple process, which we call the Y platform, the yield platform. And then our yield protocol, which is underlying technology powered by the YOP token, allows users to interact with these smart contracts on this open decentralized network. And it does all the hard work for them. So they don't have to get into the technicalities, understand what the, you know, pure underlying tech is. They just have a beautiful, easy to use interface. They hit yes, they deposit their funds, and they earn yield on that. And we want to make it easy as possible. And we see this space growing, not just within the crypto community, but in the wider space. And hence, we opted with, you know, a traditional institutional investor like Piraeus, and we're really happy to have them on board. And we think with a balance of the traditional markets and the crypto space together, we can really grow this into a successful product.
Yeah, because for years, you know, people have been, you know, getting into Bitcoin, blockchain, all that investments, but I suppose the masses of the population have found it hard to get involved, like you say, because it's a great learning curve, and you know, it's hard to get involved with this. It's having to log on and sign up different platforms, all that stuff. And so I suppose you're bringing this app to the mass generations and populations. So when are you hoping to get this app out there?
Yeah, so we've been in development for a few months, mm-hmm. and we anticipate to start having our alpha version of testing done in mid-January, and we look to roll out in the Q1 next year. So around February time, mid-Feb, we should have our app live in the Apple iStore. And from then, we'll just kind of continue to grow our feature sets and products as the you know, community and the product grows itself. So, Q1 next year, look out for the application. We'll be making various announcements along the way as we hit milestones. But that's the big one for us, you know, to release the first version and get it out there, get all the users on board. There's been a lot of excitement generally about the product, with the capabilities of it being a platform and a protocol, you know, tied into one. We look forward to that.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, Justin, the fact that, I don't know if you've seen it, but relatively recently in October, there was an announcement by PayPal that it will now allow customers to hold and shop using cryptocurrencies. And, you know, they have something like 26 million, you know, merchants on their network. So I think that's sort of very much, you know, starting to establish cryptocurrency in this field as a very sort of, you know, much more established than it has been perhaps prior to this. You know, it's, dare I say it, you know, it's almost adding credibility to what's gone on in this space.
Yeah, well, let's be honest, I talk to, you know, guys involved in blockchain and crypto every week on the podcast, and I was saying there, to me, PayPal getting involved is a game changer, and that, you know, that opens it up to the mass market, because I know a lot of people have heard of Bitcoin, you know, but it's still a cryptocurrency. It's still very niche, you know, compared to the main market. I mean, you know, if I ask, you know, people who I know, my friends, most of them have never invested in Bitcoin. It's still very niche. Now, PayPal getting involved is a game changer, like you say, because they are a massive. Yeah. And even I've got a PayPal app on my account, and I'd probably buy a Bitcoin, you know, via PayPal. And again, you guys, you're up there making DeFi, you know, more accessible, is going to help. It's the interface, isn't it? How do we use it? You know, how easy can you make it for people? And that's what you do, I suppose. So yeah, I think you know, massive opportunity is still there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And the point that you touch on there is that, you know, we've heard about, you know, blockchain, decentralized networks for a few years now, but you know, the biggest kind of product that can come out of all of these technologies is they are financial products, and that's DeFi, because it's an easy to kind of use product. If you develop an easy to use product, there's a huge market for it. Whereas, you know, if you start talking about complicated blockchain networks for the average kind of like normal retail individual, and you tell them about shopping and different other networks, it's too complicated. That technology is kind of, you know, probably will take a lot longer. But DeFi itself, you know, decentralized finance, it ties into what individuals on a day-to-day basis already know. You know, they understand that they deposit money into their bank account. They understand that they want to take control of their finances. And so this is just an alternative financial product that will start to coexist with traditional finance products, and that's where we see like a huge growth potential.
Yeah, and just one other question. There's a tricky question for you. So if someone's listening to this right now and they understand that you're going to create this app that's going to be quite user-friendly, but their question would be, so why do I need it? Why do I need your app? What's the advantage to me? What would you say?
Well, first of all, some of your friends or somebody in your circle is definitely going to be talking about Bitcoin over the Christmas period, because Bitcoin is hitting new all-time highs, with a market cap of over $300 billion. So the topic is hot. All the millennials want to be in this. You know, everybody, the cryptocurrency is starting to, get that cool factor. Everybody wants to be part of, what the next kind of generation of money is. And people are not, nobody's interested in checkbooks anymore or going to the bank and withdrawing cash. Everything's going digital. So in the era of digital, this is, and with Yop making it easy for you to access that digital currency platform, then, Yop's the one to have. So we believe that, that's where the appetite will come from. There's huge demand in that kind of segment and age group. And we look forward to onboarding all of those customers.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Nick. Well, back to you as always, Nick. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following Perez on Vox, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
I mean, I would say the main reason is that, we have got a great portfolio of, very much next generation businesses and companies now, supplemented with the addition of Yop, which, as you say, is a very sort of hot, interesting space to be in. And investing in Perez is a great way of getting exposure to that whole portfolio.
Excellent stuff, guys. Steve, thanks, Nick. Hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of The Crypto Trader, which is, as I said before, is my poshest coffee coaster. In fact, a cup of coffee sitting there right now. And it'd be good to know there's no stains on your head on the front of the cover, Glenn. So it's just a little bit over the crypto in that crazy, jagged, sort of broken up writing. Crypto! And crypto is, sorry, I suppose it's quite appropriate. It's breaking out, like that broken writing on the front of your cover. Bitcoin.
It is. That's what the broken writing was supposed to symbolise.
And of course, today is vaccine approval day, which is a big day, isn't it? What did you say before we came on about it? What did you say?
I said I'm looking forward to having those microchips injected into my veins so that the government can control me, as if with there'll be a little man in an office somewhere with a joystick, and he'll be able to move my limbs in any way he likes.
And I'm assuming you're being sarcastic there, yeah?
No, I believe it. No, I'm being sarcastic, yes.
Do you know what? It worries me.
It's not to say I totally trust the vaccine necessarily, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't think anybody would intentionally.
Well, don't conspiracy theorists say they're not conspiracy theorists, because, what they believe is true. I was genuinely worried. A person who follows me, and Twitter sometimes do this, doesn't they? Someone who follows you replies to someone on Twitter, and it highlights the person who's tweeting who you don't follow and the person who follows you who replied to them. And they talked about chemtrails. Have you ever heard of this? Basically, when a plane goes over above, this guy called Dan said, "They're doing it again. They're doing it again." And angry faces and icons.
They always say that. "They're doing it again." You're right.
I said, "What are you talking about? It's just a trail of a plane going over." They're convinced. These tinfoil hat-wearing maniacs. And I was surprised. I wasn't sure if they were spoof or they were true. And they can be believing they're injecting chemicals into us to suppress the population. And they believe the vaccine is that. They believe a vaccine is a microchip by Bill Gates. I feel like either getting involved and I'm going to laugh, and this is hilarious, guys, or just retweeting the whole thread. So Twitter, can you remove these maniacs from Twitter? Because they call everyone else sheep, right? But the thing is, if you argue them, no, you're going to look into it, mate. And what they'll do is give you a link to a YouTube video, but it's some guy going on for 3 hours. It's so boring that you just accept it. Or most of the people, they call other people sheep. They're sheep. Their analysis is not that deep. They just fall in. Oh, yes, chemtrails, yes, and vaccines. Oh, get a life. Do you know what I generally think? Most people are so bored by life, they have to have some kind of fantasy in it, and they take it too far. You know, it's nice to have a bit of delusion, it's a bit of hope delusion, but when you're extremely deluded, it's bad for you, mental health-wise, you know? And these people, I feel they need help, some of these people. Why don't need vaccinated. Yeah, they need vaccinated.
The chemtrails thing, if there was any actual evidence, that would be good. But like you say, there'll just be there. I've checked it out as well. There are just very long videos with extremely spurious evidence. And like you say, it's weird because they're saying, don't be gullible. You know, don't be like the sheep. Hey, wake up, sheeple, they say. Don't be gullible.
I know. And they'll just accept one video
by some random bloke on YouTube instead of believe that. Instead. Yeah. It's like, how gullible can you get? You know, they say we're gullible to trust the government, but how much more gullible are you if you trust some bloke who you know nothing about on YouTube?
Odd guy with questionable qualifications on YouTube just goes on. Yeah, no, don't ignore your friends and family who are a bit sane or some of that. You know, go with some guy on YouTube who's got this long video about nonsense that's unfounded. Don't believe all the outlets, you know, that you won't believe it. You know, what I'll start doing now is I'll distrust everything. MSM, all the mainstream media. So I won't bother looking at, from the BBC or Financial Times or Bloomberg or Reuters or any of these. I won't bother. What I'll do is just watch a guy on YouTube and believe him instead. I think, are you insane? You are the sheeple. Anyway, and I just feel these people are lacking something in their life, and I think they should have Bitcoin in their life, because you can be extreme and believe in Bitcoin. We know that. There's a Venn diagram of, you know, Bitcoin believers, the hodlers, and they're very extreme and deluded. So rather than just talk about nonsense, at least put your energy into something that you can make money at, you know, like crypto or something like that, you know, rather than just talk about nonsense in the air. Oh, they're poisoning us. I can believe it. These guys look quite sane, you know, but you see what they're tweeting. Get them off Twitter. Twitter's rife with it, isn't it? Nuts.
Twitter's absolutely full of it. But I mean, look, I'm an arch skeptic in that I don't trust the MSM, but I don't trust the bloke on YouTube either. Right. And I literally don't trust the views of anybody.
I don't trust
Bloomberg and all the rest of them to tell me the truth either.
Do you know why there's been political pressure to get this vaccine out? I mean, the safety data is fine. I mean, it seems all good. You know, it doesn't seem anything to be worried about at all. And I'm sure they went through the proper process. But this government have been so, you know, bad at, with everything to do with COVID. They wanted to do something right. You know, they want to say at last, we did something right. And so they wanted to beat everyone. They wanted to be pioneers at something. So they tried to do a testing, they messed up. They tried to do a track and trace, they messed up. They tried to do a lockdowns, but they're messing that up because it's too confusing. They're messing everything up. So they want to do something. And they said, right, let's be the first. Get the vaccine out there, which probably you shouldn't be the first on, really. You should let other countries maybe go first.
If you're at school and there are vaccinations, what kid runs to the front of the queue and goes, I want to be the first?
The thing is, these conspiracy theories put faith in the government, believing they're organised enough to come up with theories. They're not. You see now how organised the government are. They're not going to be able to come up with these, you know, really left-of-field conspiracies and make them real. They're just theories in your head. Get real. The government can, you know, let's be honest, they can't organise a pee up in a brewery, let alone some complex theory that you've come up with that you think is real. Unbelievable. Anyway, I just say that. It's linked to sort of Bitcoin in some way, because you have got these extremists. Extremism on any level is bad. You know, fundamentalism is bad. And moderation is hard, but it's where it's at, really, if you want happiness in any part of life. And even investing, I think, you know, a bit of moderation is what you do. But
I'm with you there.
Having said that, Bitcoin is powering up, and
Bitcoin isn't extreme anymore. Bitcoin's mainstream now.
Oh, exactly. That's why the people are going to other cryptocurrencies now, I suppose. But trouble is now institutions got hold of Bitcoin. So they've got Bitcoin now. Let's move away. Let's go down into unextremism. .com. So what's your thoughts? You're out there, aren't you? You're out of Bitcoin.
How do you know? Oh, Twitter. Of course, I tweeted it, didn't I? That always gives away my secrets when I say them on Twitter.
Why are you out? Do you think it's rolling over or what?
I got out because basically, similar to 2017, if you look into my book there, you'll see that at the end of 2017, right at the end of the tail end of the market. I made my name on the internet, as it were, by putting on Facebook my warning that the chart had gone parabolic, and I'd seen warning signs that told me that it was quite possibly time to get out, that we'd reached the top. So I called the top, and that was the top in 2017. And then, of course, Bitcoin fell by about 85%, and many other cryptocurrencies fell by sort of 95% or even more than that over the ensuing sort of year or two. And what I saw the other day was, I mean, look, we're not at the tail end of a long bull market like we were in 2017, but we'd had such a run-up, and it had become parabolic in shape, where it's, for people who can't remember what a parabola looks like from maths, it starts off kind of like a gentle curve and then gets steeper and steeper until it's practically vertical. And that's kind of what I was seeing with Bitcoin. Not quite vertical, but it was rising very steeply, and it had barely stopped since about $11,000, and it had got all the way to almost $20,000. And once it beat its all-time high, which it did on Monday, it got up to about 19,700 or thereabouts. Was that Monday? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Monday. That's when I basically thought to myself, I don't trust this anymore. I'm not sure that it's going to break 20,000 and get higher. So I took a kind of calculated guess, really. I thought there's going to be a lot of resistance around 20,000. I can already see the price faltering. So I decided to just get out, because the beauty of it, of course, is that just because I've got out doesn't mean I can't get back in again. So I got out, took all my profits, sitting on my profits, which I still am. And if it breaches sort of what I consider key chart levels around about the 20,000 mark, or perhaps even slightly below, depending on how the chart develops from here, then I'm perfectly happy to get back in again. But for the time being, I'm just going to sit pretty. That's my plan.
Where did you get back in? Where?
What? Say that again.
What did you say you'll get back in where? At what level?
It depends on sort of how the chart moves from here. And actually, it's recovered somewhat.
Yes.
More strongly.
What happens now, Glenn, if it just powers up again?
What happens now if it just powers up again?
Yeah.
Well, then I'll get a signal at some point to buy into it.
Does that say you were wrong? Are you happy to be wrong on that?
Yeah, yeah. I'm always happy to be wrong, because I'm wrong as
well. Nice. Well, it's happy to be right, isn't it?
A lot of the time.
It's more jolly to be right, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It makes you feel great to be right. But like I said, I think I'm going to quote myself now in my latest tweet. Was that my latest tweet? Yes, it is my latest tweet. I said, because I bought in very briefly yesterday when I saw the price about to break out, and it did break out. I bought in at the breakout, and then it plunged all the way back downwards. It plunged by about 5% in a matter of a couple of minutes, which is the kind of thing that Bitcoin does. I had a stop loss in, so I sold out at my break-even level, so I didn't lose any money. And I wrote, well, that was a lovely bull trap, which is, you know, what you call that kind of thing when it sucks the bulls in, like it sucked me in, and then suddenly it shoots back down again. So I said, that was a lovely bull trap. I'm out at break even. Preserving your capital is more important than being right about what will happen next.
Mm.
See, that kind of humility, I represent deep humility, Justin. And with my humility, I'm happy to accept, within minutes of having put out a tweet saying, here we go, this is looking really bullish, within about 5 minutes of that, I was saying, I'm out. Because, you know, if you want to make money trading, you have to be prepared to change your mind very, very quickly, to change it completely, and to utterly revoke what you'd said previously about the way the market was going.
Let me ask you a question, right?
Yeah.
You said you got out of break even. Did you?
Yeah. Hmm?
Did you get exactly break even, or was it a couple of pence below, a couple of quid above, a couple of quid below, or was it exactly break even? You said that I'm out at break even.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if it was a couple of pence.
When people say that, generally they made a small loss. When people say
I think
that.
I might have made a small profit on that one.
No, come on, Glenn.
I might have done. I think I might have done. I'm going to have to check my record.
Sometimes you get tired of being right all the time. Just sometimes, like, you know, sometimes it's like, no, seriously, you know, sometimes you can get right so often, you think, God, I wish I was wrong sometimes, you know. Just a refreshing change. I'm sick of it being right all the time.
Well, there you go. It was a breath of fresh air that I was wrong that time. I'm looking at it now. I actually got out at a small profit, not a small loss, Justin. So I wasn't trying to hide anything. I had nothing to hide.
What did you make? What was the small profit?
I don't know. I can't calculate it.
What did you say then?
I can't remember the exact amount.
Well, look at your account. You should know that. Come on,
yeah,
Glenn.
I know, but I'd have to then put in my passwords and my special phrase and my special this and, you know, this security. I haven't got, unless you want to sit here for the next 3 minutes while I, you know, get out all my security.
You reckon you made a small profit there, yeah? How do you know that? If you don't know.
Because I'm looking at the price chart. God's sake. Because I'm looking at the price chart, right? Yeah. And I can see the point where I bought in, and I can see the point
well, you
where
must know
as
how many
I
pips.
Remember in my memory where I think I set the stop loss.
Well, you must know how many pounds per point you were going for. You must know that. You can work that off that. Surely. Come on. You can do that. Man. Just off the top of your head. Come on. I don't usually put a tweet out there not being accurate, Greg. Come on. I want you know, hold your account. You're a professional.
It doesn't matter.
You're a professional trader, for heaven's sake.
Hang on.
You're a professional trader, for heaven's sake. If you don't know how much money you've lost or made on any one trade, how are you expected to... You were setting the standard, Glenn. You're a book writer. You're an author.
How many trades I've got? I've got millions of them. I mean, not.
You
got
millions of trades on?
I've got tons of shares. I've got loads of shares. I've got currencies. I suggest
you get your house in order.
The dollar against the dollar, the euro against the dollar. I've got commodities.
You have no idea what's going on.
I've got so much going on.
So you have no...
I told you I'd have to log into my special crypto account.
So essentially, you have no idea what's going on. There's so much going on. You're in a world of chaos and disorganisation there, and you have no idea if you actually made money or lost money in that trade. You say you made a little profit.
Just call it break even. You say it's a couple of quid here or there. I don't know.
You're saying it's not, though, is it? The break even, the chance of you actually breaking even, spot on for the spread and the cost of trade and all that, it's been spot on where you got zero return and zero loss on that. The chances of that, Glenn, very slim.
I'm concerned that we're wasting the time of this podcast on this nonsense. People want to know.
I want to know how much you made.
They write tweets to us, to you and me.
People want to know.
Can you tell us about this, that, or the other? And we're not going to have time.
People want to know exactly how much you made.
I told you probably 100 quid, 10 quid. It wouldn't have been more than 100 quid, or I probably would have noticed.
So you said 10 quid, 100 quid, pennies. There's a big difference between pennies and 100 quid.
I don't know, Justice. You're breaking me down. Okay. I don't know.
I want accuracy next, okay?
I'll say anything you like. Okay. Just stop.
Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, what's the news on blockchain, crypto, any stuff of that? You mentioned before we came on, Ethereum. What's the deal?
Yes. Ethereum. Right. So I'm just trying to recover from that.
Glenn, open your account. Let's see how much you made. Let's go back to that. Go on.
Ethereum. There's been a major development in the world of Ethereum, which people need to know about if you're considering buying Ethereum at any point. And Ethereum is, like Bitcoin, looking very, very strong. It reached an all-time high, just like... not an all-time high. In the case of Ethereum, very, very far from an all-time high, because Ethereum peaked much higher, about twice its current level, or even more than twice its current level back in 2018. Bitcoin has reached its all-time high. Ethereum still very far from the all-time high because it had fallen so incredibly far in the...
$600 now. It did peak at, what, 12 and twice? Oh, yeah. Okay, so Ethereum's the one to get into, isn't it?
About 640. I mean, it's already up about 350% since the start of the year. But the chart is looking very strong. It's recovered... I mean, I sold my Ethereum as well as my Bitcoin near the peak, and now it's recovering pretty impressively.
Did you break even on that?
No, I made a profit. I made a profit on Ethereum. Yeah. I can't remember how much before you ask, okay? Like I said, I have to get into my edit. Anyway, I don't talk about amounts. But anyway, so do you want to know what's going on with Ethereum? It is the world's second biggest cryptocurrency, and it has we've now entered the world of Ethereum 2.0, okay? Because before
it was just
It was just the original Ethereum. It was good. It's called the world's computer because there is so much that you can do with Ethereum. Ethereum powers many, many other applications. Unlike Bitcoin, which is more or less a kind of pure currency, Ethereum powers many, many other cryptocurrencies and many types of decentralized finance companies and all kinds of other things. It's very, very clever. We've talked about it many times before. Anyway, Ethereum 2.0 is the planned upgrade, which will allow thousands more transactions to take place every second than were previously possible. There was congestion on the network in 2017, for example, because of a game called Crypto Kitties, which was a kind of collectibles game with little cute pictures that you could collect. Yeah, I know, but it's people like that kind of thing, Pokemon type stuff. And it slowed the network right down because so many people were buying these crypto kitties. But so they thought we're going to need a big upgrade. Finally, after 3 years, we've got the major upgrade. They put it on a separate blockchain. So it's kind of in a testing phase at the moment. But the idea is that hopefully the entire network will migrate onto the new Ethereum 2.0 at some point soon. And when that happens, Ethereum will be much much more scope and scale, and it won't slow down when it gets congested, when loads of people are using it. So that is a major development in the world of Ethereum. And price-wise, as I say, it's recovering very strongly. It's almost back to that high point that it reached a few days ago. I'm watching it closely. I'm watching the pattern forming on the chart because I like to see a nice resistance line form. And when I see a decent resistance line, then I think, okay, that could be a good place to buy just above that level because we could get a really nice breakout. So that's what I'm looking out for. Same with Bitcoin. Same with pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do they test, you know, a blockchain? You see, put it just got two other people, you know, stand either side of the chain and tug it hard.
You just get a bunch of people to carry out transactions, basically, just to do loads and loads of transactions.
That's what I mean, sort of, and yeah, also just tugging
on. They're setting up people who are kind of in charge of it. Basically, people have to deposit approximately $20,000 worth of Ethereum into a special smart contract, and they deposit this Ethereum into it and kind of leave it there, and then that entitles them to be sort of masters of the blockchain, as it were. They will have a certain amount of responsibility for the new proof of stake mechanism. Oh yeah, that's an important thing to mention. You know, proof of work, which is the thing where on Bitcoin you have these computers carrying out really complex calculations in huge server farms, and it uses up an enormous amount of electricity, and that's kind of the way that the whole system functions, and everyone says that's very environmentally unfriendly.
Yeah.
Which it is. Well, with Ethereum 2.0, they're ditching that entire system, and instead of proof of work, you have a thing called proof of stake, where basically transactions are verified through people proving that they have very large amounts, like, as I say, $20,000 or more of Ethereum. So they have to deposit that into the smart contract, and then it says, yes, you have got lots of Ethereum, and we're going to reward you by giving you some brand new Ethereum kind of thing.
How much should I put in? Do you know?
$20,000, like I say, or more.
It's not a lot, is it?
It's not a great deal, yeah. And yeah, you get once you've done that.
I suppose like a dividend, though, is it? The more you put in, the more you get.
You validate transactions that are done on the network once you've staked. That's your proof of stake. You stake that amount of money, and then you get a reward. Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. I suppose is it like a sort of dividend? The more you put in, of course, the more you get.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it's a nice little system. I mean, you know, if we, I could go into depth for you if you like, but
no,
we haven't really got
no,
time. We
no,
haven't got time.
No,
but,
no, no.
But it's not
a good,
quite,
it's a good excuse to get out of
you. It's not quite secure. Proof of work on Bitcoin system is a very kind of secure system. It makes it very, very difficult to cheat the system. Some people think proof of stake isn't as secure, but you know, it's. to some degree, that's quibbling, I think. Though Bitcoin purists will go, that's not quibbling. This is terrible what they're doing. It ruins everything. But, yeah. You know, I don't necessarily agree with those purists.
Okay.
Anyway, so let's just talk quickly about shares, stocks and shares and stuff, because people have been asking on...
Have they?
A few people just been asking, you know, can you talk about stocks and shares, but you
say
know
no,
what you're,
I'm the crypto
what
trader.
Out,
I am the crypto trader. Blah, blah, blah. Just tell them, say no, I'm the crypto trader. That is, I am the crypto trader.
That's the name of my book.
The book is not
that.
Yeah, but you know, well, no, he doesn't say in brackets it. I also trade stocks and shares. you know, he doesn't say that. Just say I am the crypto trader. I'll release a new book called The Stocks and Shares Trader, and I'll do that later, and I'll talk to you about it then. Till then, buy the crypto trader. That's what I talk about. That's go on then.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't got much to say about it anyway, luckily. So,
because you haven't got a book out on it.
The upshot is I own a lot of American shares and some British shares and some European shares, but mainly American shares, because that market just keeps on rocketing upwards, doesn't it? You know, it's been like that for years now, and it seems silly to kind of not take part in that. The NASDAQ is up again. The S&P 500, they're all, you know, breaking records constantly, for new highs here, new highs there. So I've got lots of American shares. I'm a little bit worried. And I'll tell you what makes me worried is something like Tesla, right? Tesla is just, you know, it just keeps going higher and higher and higher. The shares are ridiculously high now. I think they represent something like 65%. Like Tesla represents the size of its market cap is something like 65% of the entire world's car market now, even though it sells a piddling amount of cars compared to any of the big motor manufacturers.
Yeah, so the data shares are extremely high. It's like tech and data.
It's about the future and they're going to take over the world and all the rest of it. And I do buy into that story to some degree. But Michael Burry, the famous guy from The Big Short, remember that film?
Yeah.
The guy who he's made tons of money shorting because he saw the financial crash coming in 2008 before almost anybody else did. He predicted that, you know, these mortgage-backed securities were extremely dodgy and would crash the market. He's basically saying, he deleted his tweet, actually, interestingly, but he was saying that Tesla, you know, he said was the effect of what I just said about it being, you know, worth a silly amount of the total car market in terms of its market cap. He clearly sees it as a sign of extreme froth. And that worries me because he's a very, very foresighted man.
Well,
he's a lucky guess.
No, exactly. The thing is, yeah, it wasn't just him who saw that happening. There's a lot of people who saw it happening. I mean, he made a lot of money out of it, and he was featured in that film, so he became famous from it. But yeah. How many other good calls he made? He was doing one on water for a long time, and that was after the film. It mentioned it said water is the next thing. He's been banging on about that for years. It's true.
Yeah,
shorts can take years to actually topple over, you know.
True, his timing is that's the problem with those things, and his timing was very dodgy. If you remember in the film, some of the blokes in the film looked like they were almost going bankrupt,
and in the meantime, you can make money, you know, on the long side, you know, it's just riding it, and then get when you see a big, because there's always, you know, there's a big sell off. I got a theory sometimes that we are too risk averse, and when you get into it too much, when you get too experienced, you become a bit too, and you worry about things going to happen in the future. And most of the time, those things never happen. You know, most of the people want shares to go up. So that's the way they go. You know, the investment goes in. People want to grow and expand businesses. And so every now and again, you have the steam has to come out a little bit. But generally, you know, we're not going to get, you know, this kind of, so we've come closest we've ever seen now to you know, this pandemic. Let's be honest, you're not going to get a bigger event than that happening ever. Again, I mean, we may have another one in 10 years' time, but that's huge. And you get all these doomsayers on Twitter, and I unfollowed most of them because they just prevented me putting my money to work because they kept worrying me all the time. I thought, do you know what? Just invest in small cap companies. I have a circle of competence. You know, I realize what it is. It's small cap companies. I like researching them, and I just think most stocks I own now won't be affected by the COVID, the COVID-19. And one of them was that started a rally very strongly anyway. And I just generally look at future-proof my stocks rather than, you know, not investing. It's pointless. Don't worry so much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, and that's why I own so many US stocks at the moment, because the positive story is very powerful. The positive story is that, you know, we had this terrible virus. Now a vaccine is on its way, which suggests that society will get back to normal at some point in the not too distant future. And we've had all that money poured into the world's economies by governments everywhere, like enormous amounts of financial stimulus, almost unprecedented in history. And so that kind of makes you think, well, if we're going to have a natural recovery anyway, because everybody's getting back to work and going back out to eat and all the rest of it, plus we've had this massive financial stimulus, you know,
plus you've got
happen?
Biden, a new president, they're not going to want to create the economy. You know, they're going to want it's going to be a start, you know, hit the ground running, you know?
Yeah. And if anything, the one thing we might be worried about is stocks rocketing and inflation possibly caused by this enormous financial stimulus. And if we get inflation, clearly that's worrying people, because that's one of the reasons why money is pouring into things like Bitcoin. Not pouring into gold, interestingly. Gold is having a correction, I guess, within a long bull market. I'm not going to say the bull market is over, because it had reached an all-time high, gold had. And it's really only had, if you look at it on like a monthly chart, you know, a chart that spans a couple of decades, it still only looks like a small correction that gold's had. So it could well recover here and go to even greater all-time highs. I'm not yet ready to declare that bull market over. But Bitcoin, I mean, people have been liquidating gold and money has been going into Bitcoin. So the point is, gold has already risen a lot over the past year or two. Bitcoin is now having its time in the sun. And time both up. Of these, of course, both of these are plays on the narrative that we're going to get inflation, that currencies are being depreciated, fiat currencies, national currencies being depreciated by all this money printing, and that money will now, you know, flow into what are considered more stable currencies, even though they're not really very stable, Bitcoin and gold. But, you know, that's the narrative anyway, with money. That's why money's pouring into them. Ha!
I didn't listen to anything past 11 o'clock, which is your time to finish there. Sorry, Claire, I can't respond, because, and what I'll do, I'm going to edit that last 2 minutes off the podcast, all right? Just some midway through your sentence.
That was the most important bit. Can't you edit out that part in the middle where you were going on and on about...
That was the most...
On and on about something.
In my mind, that was the most important part. Now listen, get out there and look at those chemtrails, okay? And do not get that in line for that vaccine, Glenn, because those tinfoil hat-wearing lunatics know where it's at. Watch that guy on YouTube, he'll tell you.
What you want to do is measure the angle of the chemtrail in the sky, right? Draw a little line, trace it on a piece of tracing paper, and then overlay it on a chart, and it will tell you what direction Bitcoin's going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, you know what? You do that. You probably get a good following if you come up with lots of really... I wonder how odd you can make these theories, right? And still get people thumbs up. Yeah, as long as it's back in their main theory. And you get lots of followers, and then you become an influencer, and in the end, stand up and say, "You idiots! You fools! you take your tinfoil hats off and just have a walk in the nature and just enjoy life. Calm down. If you're already obsessed with something, get obsessed with Bitcoin." Yeah. Lovely.
Good idea.
Anyway, this is not going to hurt. Cheers, Glenn. Speak you next week.
What do you mean this is not going out?
Speak you next week.
All right, bye.
Is that that's not a strong finish, Glenn. You just say, "Good man." I said, "Cheers, Glenn." You say, "Good man." See?
All right, well, I'll do that next.
No, no, cheers, Glenn.
Oh, are we still recording?
Yeah, cheers, Glenn.
Good man.
Yeah. You didn't have conviction in that. Should you try again? Cheers, Glenn.
Good man. How was that?
Yeah, well, do a practice for next week, okay? In the mirror, just pointing yourself. Good man.
All right. Okay. Good man.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Mode Global Holdings. Don't know who that is. Mode is the ticker. I'll have to look into that. At four, Kistos. By the way, Mode is up 1.15% to 44 pence. At four, Kistos up 7.6% to 134. At three, Concepta up 34.38, 2.15. At two, Eurasia Mining up 6.4% to 41.5. And at one, Rambler Metals and Mining. That's down 2% to 0.235. All right, top five most liked RNSs, and I'll look at this most read as well. Let's look at these. Okay. Most liked RNSs are as follows. at 5, Tissue Regenics. First delivery of OrthoPure XT. At 4, United Oil and Gas, operational update, Egypt. At 3, Alba Minerals, underground drilling, update at Cloggay Mine, Gold Mine. At 2, New Formix, appointment of non-executive director. And at 1, Tech Capital, Solaris launches on Amazon in North America. And pretty much similar, most viewed. Omega Diagnostics is one CEO bought a couple of shares there, I think, isn't he? What else is there? There's a Tomco and Hemogenics, Postum Circular. That's pretty much it. Anyway, thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.